Torahway, Northwest London, Wednesday the 27th of November, Choftes Cheshvan, Harav Pinchas Hakenbroch, Our Avoidah.
Morning,
everyone. Morning.
Morning. Good morning.
A number of people are unwell, dear friends of ours, and therefore we'll dedicate this learning this shiur firstly for our dear friend Dudi. For Shlema Yosef Ben Dov Ben Chela, along with Yehudis Nechama Bas Sora Rochel, and along with Tzivi Bas Sosha Gila, they should all have Refuah Shleima Pesach Shachar Yisrael. So the topic is not what the topic was or seems, and that's really the theme of the parsha. Nothing is what it seems. That's the story of life. So we know that the parsha, the essence of the parsha, is very much about Yosef, about Yitzchok, who's find himself deceived by Yaakov, stealing of the brochas by Yaakov from Yitzchok, taking them from Esau. So let's try and understand the parsha and perhaps what we meant to achieve and accomplish in our avodah. So the first question we obviously have is why in the first place was Yitzchok giving the brochas to Esav? We all know who Esav was, Esav HaRosha. Why is it he would want to give the brochas? What did he see in Esav that he felt that he wanted to give the brochas to Esav? What was it going to achieve? Secondly, we need to understand, why is it that Yitzchok had this tremendous burning love for Esav? We know Kitzayid Befiv, we're told in the Torah, which also needs explanation. Because he was a great hunter, we're dealing with Yitzchak Avinu. Because he was a great hunter, because he came back with game. Therefore, that's a reason all of a sudden to have a great love and admiration for his son when Yitzchak is Kularuchni. What's going on? So the Arizal suggests an idea that Yitzchak saw in Esav the soul of Remeir, Kitzayid Befiv, Befiv meaning the mouth, right? And we know that Remeir from the Gemara Gittin was a descendant of converts, and in fact, there's a tradition that he came from Esav. And therefore, Befiv means the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh. We know Remeir was Dan Mishnah Remeir, so therefore, the question we have is, okay, so he saw, so Yitzchok saw in Esav that he saw Remeir, who was going to be a descendant of him, and he saw that there was this Befiv, this Torah Shebaal Peh, and that was what attracted him. That was Kitzayid Befiv. We still need to understand, it's very strange, what has that got to do with anything, and why is it he would still want to give the brachas? Third question is that Rivka tells Yaakov to go and shecht shnei gedi izim, right? Two goats, bring them back, and then she's going to send him in so that he can get the brochas. Why is it that she required and insisted that he bring back two goats? Why would one not have sufficed? After all, Yitzchak had such an appetite, right? He was so hungry. One goat wouldn't suffice. So Rashi says, on the spot, v'chi shnei gedi izim hayamachloi sho Yitzchok. Was it really that two goats were required for Yitzchok to satisfy him, to satiate him? Ela Pesach haya. It was Pesach. This is the answer. Ha'echad lehikriv lehtischoi. So one was the korban Pesach, and then v'ha'echad also matamim. B'pirkei Reb Eliezer. So the other one was for matamim. Very nice. Rashi's explanation, we've got two shnei gedi izim that he has to bring back. One for the Korban Pesach, one for Matamim. That's why he's got to bring in two shnei gedi izim to Yitzchak. The only question with that is, why couldn't they both? Why couldn't they combine these two aspects? Have one goat that comes in, that he brings in, which is the Korban Pesach, and at the same time, it's also Matamim, Eshel Lakayim Shneim. Why do you have to separate them? We need to understand. So I want to give a large preface based on the works to answer these questions, based on the works of the Ramchal, an idea I heard from Rav Zakutinsky, and hopefully this will be able at the end to answer all these questions, and if not, I'm sure you'll remind me to come back to the questions. So, if I was to ask you, what is the purpose, the taklis, of the creation of this world? It's the question the Ramchal deals with in Mesech Yesharim. What's the purpose of the creation of the world? So, the truth is, we can't second-guess God. We don't know. It's one of the unknowables why the world was created. Why would God want to create this world? Well, what we do know is that once he created this world, what did he want from this world? What did he want from us? What's the purpose for us? What's our taklis? So there's a medrash that said, "Misava Kadosh Baruch Hu liyos loy dira b'tachtoyim," which the Rebbeinu Shel wanted to have a dwelling place, wanted to dwell in this world, wanted to be close to us, and therefore he wanted to dwell close to us in this world. The Ramchal says that there are two parts, and this is the fundamental idea. There are two aspects. We know this in broad terms, but we're going to drill down to more specifics. There are two aspects to our avoda. There's the and there's two aspects to a person. There's a chelek elokai nimal. We have the soul part of us, the godly soul, and that part, the neshama, has an explosive spiritual energy, an unquenchable thirst that our souls have. And their desire for each and every one of our souls is to reach, to soar to great heights, to expand. We know Adam Rishon was from one side of the world to the other side of the world. His soul was expansive, and so it is that's what we want. And therefore we should have our souls want and crave Ruchnius and to develop so that they can return to their Maker and return to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. There is a second part to us, and that is that the human body, the physical, the guf, is the second aspect of us, and that just wants to be involved in physical things. It's wild, it's untamed, and it can do devastating, terrible things if left to its own devices. So the Ramchal says that there is a very difficult partnership between these two seemingly conflicting, contradictory aspects that we have in us, and that's why so often we find ourselves in angst, struggling with the inner turmoil and conflict that we have inside ourselves as we find ourselves pulled in two opposing directions because of who we are. The moshul that the Baal HaTanya gives is as follows. Beautiful moshul. Imagine a person looks up, he wants to climb a very high, lofty mountain. He knows where he wants to get to, says the Baal HaTanya, but he doesn't have the physical capability to be able to climb the great heights of that mountain. How is he going to reach that great height? Standing next to him is a beautiful, strong, wild horse. Now that wild horse could easily climb the mountain, but the problem is, because it is untamed, because it is wild, therefore, it naturally will go wherever it wants. It has no sense of direction and purpose. It will go wherever it wants, although it could go and climb that mountain. So the idea is that the rider will harness the koichos of this horse and be able to condition this horse to be able to eventually help it, assist the climber to be able to scale the great heights of this mountain. And though so it is, says the Baal HaTanya, that with ourselves, we have these two aspects. We have the physicality and the spirituality, the guf and the neshama. And the idea is that there is this uncomfortable shidduch, this difficult shidduch and partnership between the two. And if we are able to harness the two, if we are able to put the two together and they are able to work together, then in Yitz Hashem, that we are able to achieve our taklis, our purpose in this world. So what is the purpose, says the Ramchal, in these two aspects? Let's try and understand it a bit deeper. So the first, the neshama is, the idea is it needs to exercise and to develop the muscle, which is, I guess, called the neshama. In other words, we've got this latent potential, this incredible spiritual dynamite inside each and every one of us. And it's just waiting to be let, to be unleashed, to be able to expand. Then you have the second aspect, which is taming this physicality that we have, right? The guf. which is like taming the horse, right? So you've got what they call birurim, right? Which is clarifying the good from the bad in the physical world, in ourselves. And that's the body, the animalistic side of us, the urges that we have that need to be refined and that need to be harnessed. So once you have done this and you've achieved this and you put the two together, then you have an incredible power and potency in the ability to scale these great heights. And the Shamakan saw great heights. And Kachava, that's the way it was initially, or that was the intention, when we think about Adam Arishan. Pre-Chet, before the Chet of Adam Arishan, what was he? He was somebody who had a very clear mission, says the Ramchal. All he had to do is to steer clear, avoid the tree of Eitz Hadas, of Tov V'Ra, of good and bad, right, of evil, and serve God. Those were the two things that he had to do. Just steer clear and serve God. And if he had managed to succeed in carrying out that through till Shabbos, then the light of Shabbos would have been the fuel which would have assisted his physicality and being able to bring him to his purpose, his taklis, and the soul's energy would have been explosive. We all know that that wasn't what exactly happened, and as a result of the chet, therefore, things changed. All of a sudden, inside him, there was absorbed these evil qualities. It became an integrated part of who he was, and therefore, it's very, very difficult, because now there's a challenge of having to refine inside himself these evil particles, these evil aspects, which is absorbed into every fiber of his being. And therefore, it's very, very difficult. It now becomes, in fact, impossible to truly, for this soul which is trapped in the guf, this neshama which is trapped in the guf, to be able to achieve, to accomplish, to expand, to be able to reach the great soaring heights which it was intended. And on the other hand, the guf also, which we said its purpose is to be tamed, for the birurim to take place, to be refined. It is so tainted that it is almost impossible for us, for the position that we are in, to be able to accomplish the true shlemus and tachlis of the guf on the one hand, and the neshama on the other. Therefore, what occurred, we know with Adam, post-chet, we know that there was death. Misa came into being, which wasn't just a punishment, but it also had a purpose in enabling and facilitating the rectification for the chet, which was that hopefully as a result of Misa, that the person would be able to accomplish what was intended from the outset, which is the guf and the neshama should be perfected. So in other words, that we are meant to achieve as best we can these two aspects, as we already mentioned. The guf, on the one hand, we're meant to be purifying, getting rid of as much as we can of the sumeira, the bad stuff. On the other hand, we're meant to be doing good stuff. We're meant to try to bring out as much as we can the neshama that we have. Having said that, we said that because of the chet, it is impossible because of the limitations, because of this absorption, this integration of the two, and this entrapment of the neshama with all the schmutz that we have in sinus, it's very, very difficult to be able to succeed in achieving its accomplishment. The idea of Misa was, of death was, that now you have a separation of the guf and the neshama. The guf is broken down, right? And therefore, after it's broken down, it can be reconstituted, it can be achieve its perfection, right? And the idea is that the neshama now soars heavenwards, and the idea is that without the limitations of the guf, it's able to achieve its shlemus, the soul, its perfection in heaven. And then afterwards, with Tchiyas HaMesim, then there is a Shidduch once more. The two come back together in their perfected state. That is the way it works. So we find ourselves in a situation where we are trying to accomplish what so often can seem in the impossible. On the one hand, we are trying to exercise this muscle that we have, the neshama, the Chelek Elokim Imal, inside each and every one of us, that's entrapped in a guf, which is covered layers upon layers of schmutz, which we need to peel away and to be able to refine, to do birurim, so hopefully we can find and purify as much as we can in this world, both the guf and the neshama. And we find, says the Ramchal, that this is reflected in the mitzvahs that we have. We have, there's two types of mitzvahs that we have, the mitzvahs aseh, mitzvahs los aseh. So if we think about the mitzvahs aseh, so the mitzvahs aseh, the 248 positive mitzvahs, what is the idea? That is the nourishment for the neshama, for the soul. We're meant to grow through each of the mitzvahs that we have, and each mitzvah in a different way is nutrients and nourishment to bring out a different aspect of our neshama. Conversely, have the mitzvahs los aseh, and the idea is that we steer clear and we are able to refine as much as we can the negative side of physicality, and sifting through the bad, we are able to reach the good. And we see this, if we think about it, in mitzvahs that we have. Think about two of the mitzvahs, for example, that men have, mitzvah of talis, of tzitzis, and the one hand, mitzvah of tefillin on the other. Both of them are achieving two aspects, these two sides of the coin. So for example, the mitzvah of tzitzis, the idea of tzitzis is it's a shmirah, it's protecting a person, it's refining the body and reminding us that we should sumeira, we should avoid getting ourselves into doing the wrong things. Whereas the tefillin, on the other hand, they are an expression of the neshama, it's exercising that muscle of the soul. Conversely, also with women, we find the same thing. So, for example, the lighting candles, for example, Shabbos candles for women, is an expression of the neshama. And also, you have the mitzvah of mafrish challah for women, which is the other side of it, which is the las haseh, which is that separating the good from the bad, and thereby they're refining the body. So therefore, we see that there are these two aspects. Also, we find these two dimensions in Limud HaTorah. Listen carefully, so that we get it clearly. So when we talk about learning Torah, of course, every word that we learn, emes lamita, and we get tremendous schar. But there are different dimensions to learning Torah. So for example, when we speak about learning Gemara, right? So we are, the whole purpose, it is a purpose. There is a process in learning Gemara, that we go through questions and answers, shakla v'tari, and the idea is proofs, contradictions. The idea is that we arrive at a conclusion, that we arrive and understand that this is the halacha, this is what we're meant to take away from it, right? So it's a process of refining and sifting in arriving at that kernel of truth, of what we are meant to take away, halacha l'maisa, what we're meant to be doing. Whereas, if you think about the panimiyas haTorah, and everyone in their own way, in their own level, but that everything there is no question and answer, there is no process that you go through. It is what it is, which is that we are just basking in the truth, enjoying the light of the Devar Hashem, and that is it in itself. So we see these two aspects: one, which is just an expansiveness of the neshama, which is the panimiyas haTorah on the one hand. Whereas when it comes to the Gemara learning, that type of learning is more about the sifting, which we spoke about in terms of the physicality. So we find, let's return, try and get back to our questions in the time that we have, so we can actually answer them or try to. So we know that initially we said Adam and Chava, their mission was that they had these two dimensions. There was the expansiveness of the neshama that they were meant to achieve on the one hand, whereas the refining of the body on the other. And we said that after, post the chait, therefore it became more challenging, etc. So if we go through and we skip to Cain and Hevel, so we find about Hevel, for example, that it was not about confronting evil with Hevel, it was about exercising the neshama. It was more about bringing out the good, right? Whereas when it comes to Cain, he was meant to be, what he should have achieved, was a refinement. He was somebody who went out into the world, he was meant to be a refining of the body, right? He was fixing, dealing with the rubbish of this world, and sifting through it to find the good, the kernels of truth, the kernels of good, within the darkness, within the evil. We find the same thing, Avram took on both aspects, both these aspects that we've mentioned. And then, if we jump, we come to Yitzchak. And Yitzchak, we know, was most of the stories that we have with Yitzchak, if we think about it, are always in relation to someone else. So, for example, Yitzchak, we always hear of him in regards to Avraham Avinu. Or we speak about Yitzchak in relation to Yaakov Avinu. It's very rare, it's only one thing, one aspect that I think we find in regards to Yitzchak, and that is about the wells. When we hear about him digging the wells, that's the only thing that's unique to a story about Yitzchak. As far as I'm aware, if you come up with something else, let me know. And what's the idea of Yitzchak, which we hear, and seems to be an emphasis on digging the wells? The idea of digging the wells is when you dig, you are trying to reach and to discover and to unearth and uncover something of meaning, something significant, some water, some treasure that's there. You get rid of all the rubbish, the particles, the filth, and you arrive at the particles of goodness that are there. It comes to Yaakov and Esav now, right? So Yitzchak sees Yaakov and Esav, and he sees in front of him two diametrically opposed personalities, characters, and he thinks to himself that each of them are able to take on a mantle of leadership in terms of one of these dimensions. So you can have, for example, when you have he sees Yaakov, Ishtam Yoshev Alim. So Yaakov being smooth, Yaakov straight, there's no complications. He's going to sit, he's going to isolate himself, insulate himself, and he is going to be able to focus on exercising, stretching, developing, nurturing that neshama, that soul that he has. Right? That aspect. When it comes to Esav, so Ish Yodet, right? He was Sayed Befiv, right? He was somebody who was Yodet Sayed, he was somebody who went out, Ish Sadeh, he was somebody who went out into the world. He was a master at hunting, at trapping, at finding things, at distinguishing between things. And the idea that Yitzchak thought at the outset was that we would find that Esav would be able to go out and would be able to fulfill this second dimension that till now had been passed down through the generations. He would be able to refine the body, the physical world that we live in. That was what he hoped. Rivka knew differently. She knew that the second dimension, the second side of the coin, there was no way he was ra, he was wicked through and through. There was no way that he was going to be able to refine anything. He wasn't interested. And therefore she recognized and saw that Yaakov was going to have to take on both aspects, both dimensions, both the aspect of the exercising of the soul, developing the neshama, but also a refining of the guf as well. And therefore, when Rashi says that there was, and this is what the message that Rivka wanted Yaakov to convey to Yitzchak when he went in, he took in his hands shnei gidi izim, one for the Korban Pesach and one for the Matamim, right? If we think about the Pesach, right, when the Rabbeinu Shalom jumped over the houses, what is that? That is about stretching the neshama, stretching the ruchnius out into this world. Whereas the matamim is more about a refining, more about pulling out the good from the world itself. And therefore, she wanted to convey, to impress upon Yaakov, that he should tell his father, as well as, at the same time, a message which would be impressed upon our Father in Heaven, that this is the new world order, that Yaakov is going to have to take on both dimensions. He's going to be taking on the dimension of the development of the neshama on the one hand, and refining the bad stuff in the world on the other. And we find that Yaakov takes both these aspects on, and we see it throughout his life. He marries two women. He marries a Rachel and he marries a Leah, right? And they have sons. Both of them reflect these aspects, and their sons reflect these aspects. We have two leaders that come out of Yaakov and come out of Rachel, and there you have a Yehuda and you have a Yosef, right? So they both reflect this. So Yosef's world is Moshiach, is the world of Moshiach ben Yosef. What is he going to do? He confronts the Yetzirah, right? Rachel and Yosef are known for their sneers, for their modesty, for their insulating themselves from outside influences. Yosef is all about, I'm dealing, I'm grappling with the world, and therefore I have to protect myself from the outside influences. You have to rule over the tumult of the world. That's very much the way Yosef is. We think about Yehuda, we think about Leah. So Yehuda was Malchus, that's in Yerushalayim, surrounded by walls, right? The world is about an explosiveness in terms of the neshama, in terms of the soul developing ruchnius, which is what Yerushalayim is all about, as opposed to Yosef, who's all about engaging. He's got to deal with Mitzrayim, he's got it thrown into prison, he's got to deal with all the schmutz of this world. That is what Yosef is all about. So we see that through Rachel and Leah and through Yosef and Yehuda, we see that these two dimensions that Yaakov had to carry on his shoulders passed down to the Shvatim and the Shiftei Kof. So, we return to our question. It's very strange that the brachas came through trickery, right? We know that Yaakov was known as Titen Emes Yaakov. Yaakov is known for being all about Emes, right? And in fact, the Medrash says that he davened before he went in. That he should be protected. He should be saved from speaking anything untrue. How could Yaakov do such a thing? Knowing what his mother had in mind, that he's about to go in, she's dressed him, wearing the big day Esav, he's about to go in and to pull the wool over his father's eyes, whichever way you want to dress it up, whatever you want to say, he wasn't really Esav. Okay, we'll come to an answer of how he could do it, but the Lamaisa, it is a complete deceit and it is a lie. It's not absolute truth. So, how could he do such a thing? So, we have to understand that, as we already mentioned, when you are dealing with this aspect, Yaakov had both aspects. Yaakov's dimension that he had to deal with, in particular, and the challenge that he faced being Ishtam Yoshev Alim, was having to now take on that Esav aspect. That Esav aspect is, which I'm going to deal with the physical world, deal with the schmutz, deal with the filth, and to be able to find in all the filth, the particles of truth, of MS, of Kedusha, that exist everywhere I go. And therefore, he goes in holding on to truth, holding on to godliness, into this world of Sheker, and that is precisely the Avodah which was Esau's to do, which Yaakov has now taken on. So the Arizal says that Yaakov loved Esau because Kisai Befiv. Yitzchok loved Esav because Kisayid Befiv, which is the Torah Shebaal Peh, that aspect which is, as we mentioned before, in terms of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is all about going through a process of refining, of figuring out what is the good part, the part that we need, the part that we take away, and the part that we leave behind. Whereas, if we think about the Torah Shebichsav, right, which is the other part, it is what it is. God's talking to us. We accept it. There's no stirrers. There's no kashas. It's emes lamita. We take it. It is. There's no inner turmoil. There's no complexities in terms of taking it at face value. And therefore, Yitzchak saw in Esav, he saw Remez, Neshama, and Yaakov is wearing now Esav's clothing. He's taken on that responsibility that he is going to integrate both aspects of the original aspect of Ishtam Yoshev Alim, of the Neshama aspect, pulling out the Neshama, and also refining, which were originally for Esav. Now, it's very depressing at the end of this, and that's why I hope everyone stays for the next 2 minutes. Don't go away. Because at the end of this, you come out, and we feel rather depressed. At the end of the day, until Tchias HaMesim, right? Where are we? What are we actually achieving? We're in a place of exceptional darkness. The Svarim say that most of our Avodah, therefore, is mainly in our generation, is the second aspect, the aspect of Esav, which Yaakov inherited, which means it's more about dealing with the schmutz. We all know in our daily lives we have to deal with so much rubbish, right? We're not sitting there just, in the lofty basking in the divine presence day in, day out. We're dealing with the nitty-gritty of life. challenges, ordeals, questions of emunah. We deal with things day in, day out. How are we meant to deal with this? So Yitzchok Chover asked the question, Talmud of the Gros, how are we going to bring Moshiach? Question the Marbit already asks. You know, think about it. If every previous generation didn't succeed and is Yeridus Adoros, how can we achieve what they did not manage to achieve? Right? We're nothing. We're like specks in terms of who they are. They were giants. So he says, rather than bemoan the difficulties that we have and the struggles that we have, dealing with the tumah, dealing with the tzoras that we have in our world, he says, our job, our mission, is that we, as long as we hold on to the truth, and we deal and grapple with the temptations that we find, and we resist them, and we have emunah in the face of the nisyonos that we have, that, he says, is something so special that previous generations never had to deal with. An aspect of our neshama, the higher soul, we don't have. We are more deeper in the schmutz than every previous generation as time goes on. But that means we have an ability to reach and to discover and to detect and to bring out the particles of truth, of emes, of kedusha, that no previous generation could achieve. We started late, so just finished with one moshel, which perhaps explains it. So the Baal Shem Tov had, somebody came to see him, and he said to him as follows. He said to him, I owe money to a poritz, he's going to come and get me, what do I do, I'm in big trouble. So the Baal Shem Tov said to him, I'm going to give you some advice. It's his birthday coming up, the poritz. What you should do is go to the marketplace, and the first item that you see, buy it. Buy it, and that's what you're going to give to the poritz. So Kachav, he goes to the marketplace and he finds that there's this dirty, horrible sheepskin. It's the first thing. He says, what have I got to lose? I'll buy it. I listen to the Baal Shem Tov. He buys it. What's he then goes a day later. It's the birthday of the Poritz. Baal Shem Tov said I should do it. I'll try it. I haven't got the money to pay him back in any case. He goes with the sheepskin to the Poritz. And the Poritz looks at it in absolute disgust. This stinks. It's an absolute affront to my cover, to my honor. What do you think you're doing? And all of a sudden, he takes another look at it. And he notices that in the skin of the sheep, he can see the shape of his name. And he sees it and he says, this is unbelievable. Such a unique present. Everyone else gave me presents, but I could have got them myself. This is something that I never, ever received. Something so special. Such a unique gift I never, ever would have received. And of course, the lesson for us is that we find ourselves with the sheepskin. We've got a little bit of sheepskin, and that's what we have to offer to the Rebbe Shalom. The matamim that we have are when we face these challenges in our daily lives, and we are able to hold on to the truth, and we are able to resist, to stand up to whatever challenges of emunah, of the nisyonos that we have, then we are able to offer something unique that every previous generation didn't have and weren't able to offer. So Be'ezras Hashem, we should be zoiche to be mechazik ourselves, and that we should be zoiche to be able to refine our bodies and exercise our souls, and in that way will be zoiche to the Geula Shleima b'Mehrah b'Yameinu.
Excellent.
Turn this off. It's still open.